Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me is Steve. How are you doing?
I'm well, John. I'm enjoying beautiful early spring. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, you're that one.
I'm
Yeah,
that
it's
one.
kind of a mess everywhere else. Things are shaking up just as crazy in 2023 as it was in the past. Oh, I don't know. It seems forever now since the world started falling apart.
The only constant is change, John. Things will always be crazy.
Yeah, for sure. We have someone who's trying to bring some order and some reason to one little bit volatile market. We're lucky to have Max Krupashev, the CEO and co-founder of Coins Paid. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, John, thank you very much. Hi, Steven.
So you're working on making it easier and more accessible to use cryptocurrencies as a payment method. Tell us a little bit about that.
So basically I started I'm Ukrainian myself, right? So I started with crypto in 2013, right? And I sort of, some people join crypto because they want to earn quick money, right? Some people see crypto as a long-term investment, right? For me it was always about the concept, right? I'm quite sure that cryptocurrency is here to give us the opportunity to own our own assets, right? So this is the main idea of the Bitcoin, which basically was there in 2013, right?
Oh,
So I was
so
doing.
not the technical aspects, but like that concept, the idealism of it.
Exactly. But I sort of went to the ideological side through understanding the technical side, right? Because many people say, oh, it's like Bitcoin will die eventually. Some people say that it's all a scam, a Ponzi, and so on. So in order to understand why it is working, right, and why it is really what it is, I had to understand quite deeply how it works. Right, so I did it quite early in the life of Bitcoin, I think relatively early, and I was doing a lot of educational speeches, right, the Q&As in Ukraine in 2014, and sort of for me spreading this like a gospel, about blockchain and the word of Satoshi Nakamoto, sort of was always leaning towards the brands and the companies and businesses, which sort of help the adoption and help to educate the people. And if you think about crypto payments, this is this essential tool for adoption, right? We cannot speak about wide adoption if crypto is not accepted anywhere, right? This would be just not enough reason for adoption, I think. And when we speak about the main value for me, this is of course using cryptocurrency as money, right? So as a medium of exchange, right? As the way to store your wealth, right? And so on. So I think just being in the payment space, that is how we can sort of bring and help the adoption.
Yeah, that's been such a discussion and a challenge for a long time. The two parts of that. First, the consumer side, having access to it, and then if you're talking about like payment in a store or online, the vendor having access. How do you address each of those particular challenges? I mean, it's been tough for a lot of companies to try to get, much much bigger ones like Coinbase and other players to get that. So how are you tackling each of them? And I assume they're very different kinds of challenges.
Yes, and the amount of challenges here is quite huge, right? And that is what makes this business sometimes challenging, right? But also very interesting, right? Because this is how entrepreneurs are. The more challenges, the more uncertainty, the more interesting is to have fun. But yeah, I fell in love in crypto, so for me it's more of a joy than a struggle. So with the customers, right? We honestly, as a company, we don't influence the customers, not really the customers, but crypto holders that much, right? We have our own project, which is the news website where we help to educate people on what is happening in the space, but we also create educational material, right? So we are trying to chip in into educating the world. But in the end, this is not a core business, right? So the customers, they usually, in order to pay in crypto, surprise, they need to have crypto. And basically, all the researchers, statistics show that around 50% of the people are in crypto because for them, this is like an investment method, right? Or like a FOMO that everyone are buying and I will buy a bit as well. Then 30% are in crypto for its utility, right? So we can assume that 30% of the crypto holders also don't mind to spend it for the payments, right? It can be something small, like the vouchers for PlayStation, like refills of the phones, to buy some VPNs, anything that they like to buy online in a simple way, and maybe sometimes to protect the privacy, because this is what Bitcoin sort of helps you to achieve. So here we understand that with together with the adoption of cryptocurrency, and here we have millions of companies who are helping with this, right, offering different sort of tools and services. We know that many of them are just don't mind to pay in crypto. For some of them, right, if we speak about more, you know, unbanked areas of the world, for them, there is honestly not so much choice, right? They can buy crypto with whatever the money or the payment methods that they have in the country. And if they want to, for example, to watch Netflix, right, or to play PlayStation or whatever, they might just not have a card, right, to pay. But they can as well just buy the VPN and enjoy the services that they want and to pay in crypto for the vouchers, for subscriptions, and many other things which are available on the market already. So this is, in general, a good thing. With the businesses, especially we see this more on the Bitcoin bull run, where many businesses accepting crypto is sort of also to be on the hype, right? To be in the news space, right? Because when everyone are speaking about the cryptocurrency, then your news that your website started accepting cryptocurrency gets a bit more attention when there is a depression on the market. So on the bull run, many businesses see that the amount of crypto customers are growing, and they sort of looking to be sort of unique in accepting cryptocurrency to win the competition in this way. So this is one. The second one is for businesses who really struggle with accepting international, to do international sales for the goods or the services, right? If your business is truly international, if you sell something relatively unique and it is a service, then people from all over the world are willing to pay you. Our financial system right now structured in the way where it is not truly integrated, right? So you sometimes cannot pay for the goods in US if you are in Germany, right? You cannot pay for the goods in Indonesia if you have a bank in Germany, right? There are certain sort of challenges.
Slow and expensive and... Yeah,
it's so expensive and sometimes not accepted at all. I mean, we all found ourselves in the place where you try a card and it doesn't work, right? And you try the second one and it doesn't work. And you try the third one and it also doesn't work. And then you ask your friend if they have a card. And then you ask just a random Joe, please, may we use your card? We will give you money in cash. Right.
Has it come down to that for you sometimes?
Unfortunately, yes, especially in the countries which use credit cards, because in Germany we don't use them, right? So I don't have a credit card. And if they need only credit card, not a debit, not a prepaid, nothing, then I have a problem, right? Because they say you only need credit card. And I'm like, is there a particular reason why you want me to have a credit card? They say this is the rules of the company. So anyways, I sometimes have it, right? I mean, you probably all were in the situation sometimes when your card is not working, especially if you buy something, either you are overseas or you're buying something overseas, right? On some different website. Anyways, this problem exists. I faced it, right? I think some of our listeners, of your listeners, I'm sorry, might be find themselves in this situation.
A lot of people are wondering if Bitcoin or like the cryptocurrencies on exchanges that are really volatile, is that a good solution for that? Or is it more, do you think it's a stable coin because it's designed to be, you know, eliminate that volatility and the throughput problems? We've always seen about like the slow throughput on Bitcoins, it's expensive to do the exchange.
It's also, to go back to the credit card thing as well, it's also not widely accepted, right? So that, it's interesting. So you are Ukrainian, right, Max? And I was just reading a book recently called Maus, M-A-U-S. It's a book about the Holocaust and how this guy essentially escaped from Poland to Germany, back to Poland, to Hungary, and eventually to the US, right? And he was able to essentially work his way through all the camps by kind of greasing the wheels along the way with things like gold watches or a diamond ring, or basically finding ways to bribe guards along the way. And the example of crypto here is pretty
German
interesting.
Credit cards.
Exactly. And the example here of crypto is interesting because what you're saying is that you would be you would have money that's more secure, that's more widely accepted. But I guess the issue there is that it's I don't see crypto as a really good store of value. One, because of because of how volatile the coins tend to be, and two, because actually it may be difficult. You know, you mentioned that something like 50% of crypto users actually are in it for the, you know, for the gambling part of it. I don't know that it'll be easy for you to find somebody who can accept crypto payments if you're if you are in a bind. So this argument about crypto being supreme to cash or other source of value, I think, is a bit invalid. But maybe you can help change my mind on this. So how is crypto better for a refugee or something over cash or gold or something else?
Yeah. So speaking about the people who just believe that the price will be growing, right? Those who are here for investment reasons, also depends when they bought crypto, right? Some people, like people who bought early, right? For them, spending even volatile cryptocurrencies anytime is still sort of profitable, right? So they don't mind spending Bitcoin, which they bought for 100 euros a coin, right? Which was not that long ago, or for 1,000. Right, Bitcoin was higher than today, not even for a year. Right, it was basically shortly in 2018, right, and it was for almost a year, right, but still less, 21, 2022, right, it went down massively, right, it went down from May. Mm-hmm. Here we're speaking, so if we speak about those people who just believe in crypto and they have it forever, for them it's not a big problem, right? They just spend it when they have to. For the people who just like sort of the idea of using blockchain, they can hedge into stable ones, right? This is easy. All the wallets which support Bitcoin, they support USDT as well. But yeah, sort of half a step back, right? So the merchant needs speed. The merchant needs price for processing the payment, right? And they like that it is international, right? I see cryptocurrency and like different cryptocurrencies as sort of a native financial language of the internet, right? It's sort of not connected really to the company in most of the cases, right? I mean, we don't want to speak here probably about how decentralized are all of the cryptocurrencies, but this is sort of a native technology for the internet, right? It works very similar to the internet itself. Right, and semi-independent from anything. People who just opt in for using crypto only for payments, they of course mostly stick to stablecoins, right? And we see a huge growth in usage of stablecoins, right? For example, in 2015, right, when I just entered the payment space, I would say 99% of transactions were in Bitcoin. Right, it sort of was clear for those who understand the technology just a bit, that Bitcoin cannot support, right, the adoption of the crypto payments because its throughput, it's up to 7 transactions a second. In reality, 3. Right, so this is not enough, definitely, right? That is why we see BCH and BSV and the Lightning Network and all the attempts to scale old and good Bitcoin. So yeah, and right now we see that Bitcoin is approximately half of the transactions in the number of transactions. And we see that, for example, in our system, USDT on Tron blockchain, which right now is the cheapest from the popular ones. This
what,
is
what do you mean by cheapest? Is the cheapest to process or the lowest value?
No, the cheapest for transaction expenses, right? For the customer and for the merchant, and eventually for us to process the payment itself. Right. So the blockchain itself is not that expensive. It has some tricks where you can make it really even cheaper if you hold bigger amount of Tron on your balance, right? Because it gives you the energy and the bandwidth and basically things which you use as a payment, as the transaction fee. So USDT on Tron, and basically you don't hear about Tron a lot, except of that it is the one of the biggest blockchains for USDT. Basically, it went from 1% during summer last year into, 2021 and summer 2022, right? So it went x9, right? Just the statistics which I have is for summer, right? For you to understand it, it grew x10. USDT on Ethereum still used. It was a huge drop when Ethereum fees went over the roof. But we see that stables are getting the attention. BUSD also is getting the traction because Binance Smart Chain is also relatively cheap, right? I mean, I am blockchain agnostic, right? I'm happy to give my merchants the services which their customers would like to use, and the currencies they like to pay, and the blockchains they would like to pay, right? So we don't choose for the customer or for the merchant. And surprisingly, right, we don't operate in US at the moment. We don't have such traction for USDC.
You don't, meaning that you see less adoption on your platform for USDC?
Yes, very small, very small. We offer it together with USDT, right? It sort of has all the same features, all the same prices for transactions, but the traction is just significantly lower. It's not even comparable.
Interesting. Taking a bit of a higher view now, and going back to my question about sort of using cryptocurrencies in a time of crisis, I understand that I believe sometime late last year, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees essentially created a program where they were going to transfer USDC coin or USD coin to Ukrainian refugees all throughout Europe, so they can then convert that into fiat currency to cover their needs, right? Have you seen that, and what's your take on using cryptocurrency in this case by the UN to cover or to help rather with a humanitarian crisis?
There was, by the way, a huge project. There was like from the first days of war, the Prime Minister of Ukraine, together with entrepreneurs in Ukraine, they started sort of the fund in cryptocurrencies. Right, there was the addresses on his Twitter account. They collected like over 100 million within a few weeks, right? So this is, a lot of the funds that I know that are accepting in crypto from all over the world to support Ukraine, to support the army forces, the humanitarian aid, and so on. They are like, they raised in this year, I think, maybe even around 1 billion, right? I don't know all the small ones, but the big ones that I know, they raised hundreds of millions, right? And there are a few of them. So this is definitely working, and for the people who are especially on sort of when cryptocurrency is still on the good, let's say the price is good, they understand, okay, we made some money, let's just spend them for something really good to help a really good like cause in the world, right? And when we see Ukraine defend as sort of protecting the democracy all over the world, and what have we. Of course, many people joined. Many people really were promoting these funds, and Ukrainians all over the world, when their friends asking what are the ways to support Ukraine, they say, I mean, you can easily do it with cryptocurrency. So it was huge, right? I don't know if it answers your question about UN, but we were also helping a few of such funds to really convert that cryptocurrency into the fiat, which we are quite proud of.
Yeah, I'm just curious now that we've seen a precipitous decline in crypto values, whether the same holds, where they're still using cryptocurrency for humanitarian aids. Is that still the case? You know, now that we've seen, of course, most coins sort of tank.
Yeah, exactly. So here I cannot judge that much for the aid, right? I don't have all the statistics in front of me, but what I can tell you in our business, right? And of course, the humanitarian aid is not our biggest clients, right? So I don't have a lot of overview there. Basically, what I see that now, if you just think about that you holding Bitcoin, right, and it's decreasing in price or increasing in price, I believe that if you are here, as you said, for the gambling reasons, when Bitcoin is growing in price, you are less averse to spending it, right? Because why would you spend? You will spend it tomorrow and get more sort of a benefit from that, right? Because this is increasing in price. But the moment it starts to decrease, you start thinking either I should sell or spend. Aren't you? Are you with me?
Yeah. So it's basically deflationary tool, right?
So if it is deflationary, then people don't really want to spend it, right? Because why would you buy the car today if you can buy a house tomorrow? Right. This is what deflationary psychology is about. Right. That is why many economists argue that this is not a sustainable model. This cannot work. But when it has the inflationary behavior, so it's decreasing in price, then you are more sort of eager to spend it or to sell it. Right. But when you sell it, I mean, you then have to most likely withdraw the money to the bank and so on. But if you are already in the blockchain space and you like it, you sort of don't want to do that. So you might be selling in USDT and spending USDT, or you might be spending Bitcoin while it goes down in price. I will give you a simple example, right? When the space became very nasty, right? And I think it started to happen in April. Right, with all the rumors about Luna, and then with the collapse of the Luna and UST, right? This was sort of the first shake of this year in crypto industry. We didn't see decline in the number of transactions at all. We saw the decrease in average transaction, right? So we saw that people sort of started to buy less or to pay for the less services. What we started to see in the second half of the year, and honestly, FTX didn't influence that at all. We saw that amount of transaction starts to grow. I mean, not much, not 20% a month, but like 2-3% a month, which is not that bad in the crypto winter. And that the average transaction went to the level before Luna, right? So people more adapted that if they were spending $100, they continued to spend $100. So sort of the willingness of the people to use crypto for the things that they were using this before, the crash of the price or whatever, they continue to do so, even with the signs that they even do it more.
Okay, interesting. But I'm still struggling to find the correlation between Bitcoin prices and the utility of this beyond essentially a tool for gambling. I understand that it can be used for example, if you live in a country with high inflation, if you live in a country that's undergoing significant macroeconomic disruptions like the Ukraine is now. But what you're saying is that there could be some light at the end of the tunnel, and then we could have a more usable tool sometime in the future.
I think speaking about Bitcoin and utility is a bit incorrect, right? Bitcoin was made sort of to be utility as well. But right now, I think we are living in the world where we should not expect Bitcoin to give a lot of utility. Right, I think that Bitcoin is sort of the definition of decentralized money, in the sense of accumulating it. Right, this is completely protected from inflation. Right, this cannot inflate. It's impossible from the technical view. right? Speaking about the metaphor, just imagine there is only a ton of some material in the universe, right? A ton of material in the universe. It's completely useless, right? It's useless. It doesn't bring anything. It's impossible to fake. And then there is the meteorites, which are falling on the Earth, contains small amount of grams of this material, which only exists a ton in the world. This material will be expensive because it's very unique, it's very rare, right? And it cannot be created or whatever, right? So this is the limitation in supply. We see something similar with the gold, but we can argue that gold also can be used in computers, right? And gold really has some utility. And there is also a technology to create gold, right? So if gold is very expensive, then people will just be creating it from the plumbum or what is this? The second one on the right from gold, platinum, right? This is a bit different. So when you think about Bitcoin, this is something that you can buy now. And if you believe that decentralized money or assets will not disappear from the world completely, then this investment is probably one of the secured ones in the long term. This is in no way a financial advice, but this is how people should look at Bitcoin, right? The Bitcoin itself on-chain cannot scale, really. I don't think it will ever go there.
So its value really is derived from its scarcity. It's from the fact that there isn't a whole lot of it. We can only create a certain amount of it. It's 27 million or something, right? That's the number.
It's almost. It's 21 million. All of them will be mined in 120 years, right? But right now we are around 90%. I'm not sure about the amount, but somewhere there, maybe slightly more or slightly less, right? So majority of the bitcoins are already mined. But this is not only about the scarcity, right? This is what I'm trying to say, that utility of Bitcoin is slightly different, right? You can hold it in your own wallet, which belongs to you and from which you hold the private key, right? And you can hold the private key in any way or form. As the writing, right? As the metal plate with some holes, right? So this is the, or remember, but which is I don't recommend either. But you can hold this wealth, this asset, in completely your own way, right? And this is something which is completely unique and which is easily transferable. You can easily send it, or you can easily move while still being an owner of this asset. And if you think about this, this is the first time in the world where we have this opportunity, right? So this is the utility of Bitcoin. And this is probably not what majority of the people would like to hear when they hear about utility of Bitcoin. But I think that's what it is now.
Okay, so basically it's scarce. You can sort of devise how you store it and how you hold it. Every transaction is transparent as well. Would you say that you are a Bitcoin maximalist, Max?
I would say no. Some people ask if I'm on sort of DeFi on the right side of the line or on the left, which is Bitcoin maximalist. I would say I'm somewhere in the middle, right? I don't think I think that the utility of blockchain is not within Bitcoin, and I think the attempts to create to make it like that is wrong. But I also don't believe that we need to have millions of blockchains, right? I think we should have some reasonable amount. I don't know, up to 100 maximum, right? With different characteristics and modifications and ways of consensus and so on. But what is happening during the last bull run, with everyone creating their own blockchains, everyone creating the tokens, everyone saying that they are reinventing the world, reinventing the blockchain space, Web3 space and so on, this was also unhealthy, right? So I would say I'm somewhere in the middle.
Just wondering what you think of the whole Ethereum move to proof of stake. That seems like something that would be really helpful for what you're doing.
Yes, it basically decreased the price for Ethereum transactions. So this is a good thing. But it's also decreased because the usage of DeFi decreased significantly with the crash of the capitalization of the market. And we, of course, know that majority of the people are here just to make money, right? So they, of course, sort of stopped using DeFi tools for which Ethereum was the provider. Another good thing is that it became much more environmentally friendly, right? Because to run the validator, it's much cheaper and much more energy efficient than really mining with the GPUs, which were used for Ethereum mining. But it sort of became really dangerous. It became extremely dangerous that right now Ethereum is not decentralized. Right. And if we are here for real decentralization of the assets, that anyone can send anyone the money that he has in the form of cryptocurrency, then Ethereum is sort of not like that anymore. Right. So just imagine that that the someone who has the power sends to Ethereum Foundation or to the team of Ethereum that we don't like these addresses. And these addresses, and you have to block them from using your blockchain because we have the court decision in some country, let's say in US, then Vitalik Buterin and the team will have to do something about this, right? They cannot ignore this anymore. Because then when someone includes transaction from these addresses in the block, which is the validator's job, then they basically validating the they are violating the court decision from US, right? And they sort of had the chance not to do so, right? Because they were able not to include these transactions in the blockchain. I'm speaking about censorship, right? And censorship, I mean, I don't have anything against preventing the bad guys to do the bad things, right? But this opportunity that now a group of people is able to decide who can interact with the blockchain, even if they have assets on this address, this sort of goes against the idea.
The whole point of it, right?
Anyone,
yeah.
Sort of, yes, it goes against the idea that anyone can send anything through the blockchain because it's a public one. Right now, it's
are
a public one, but it's a censored one.
Are you worried at all about like a security because it hasn't been proof of stake hasn't been tested at that scale? And also, there's a regulatory aspect. You know, I think the SEC is looking at it like now it can be classified. It's more closer to be a security. And then that brings a whole different regulatory world.
The Gary Gensler,
a good reason, Gensler is looking... a good reason not to be in the US, I guess.
No, I don't want to go there, right? I don't want to blame anyone because I believe all those people who are making these rules and decisions are extremely clever and they have the idea behind it. This is just something which I find more relevant or irrelevant. And the Gary Gensler said, if I'm not mistaken, it was him who said that all the blockchains, all the crypto assets where we can locate the company or the person behind it is a security, right? Because it was created by someone for some reason, right? And it sort of has value, so why not? So I think this is not entirely a good way to go. But answering your first question, basically, I'm not so scared that the proof of stake will fail as the consensus mechanism. It's there already for many, many years. And if the stake among the validators is distributed in quite distributed way, right, then you don't really have this attack that one validator sort of makes all the calls, right? And if the system is already on the proof of stake, of course, the team behind Ethereum, they know all the biggest validators, right? And they have sort of relationships with them. They have certain amount of influence on each other, right? So this is sort of a partnership deal, right, that they help each other. So here, I think that validators and the team behind Ethereum are both extremely motivated for it to be stable, right? So their motivations align completely, right? I don't expect that we should be afraid of it. And it's more on the opposite, right? The proof of work where one company or one business or one person might have more than 50% of the hashing capacity, then they can basically not hack the network, but sort of break the network, right?
Dictate the rules, yeah.
No, it's not really dictating the rules in reality, right? Even if you have over 50% of the Bitcoin hashing, you can really do some nasty stuff, but this will lead to losing the trust in the Bitcoin, right? So you can destroy the system, but you cannot just, you know, be a king of the system and getting the profits. Destroying you can, but sustaining this on the growing way, but being in control, not really.
I wasn't extreme enough, I guess. Okay, destroying the system. That's worse. So what is the path forward for Coins Paid? Where do you see you guys in a successful scenario in like 3 to 5 years? What's happening?
To be the same as Visa right now for the payments all over the world, to become just the biggest, the strongest provider for digital assets, right? Either it is cryptocurrencies, or potentially if there is a way with the CBDCs, right? Everything which is running on the blockchain, everything which is decentralized or centralized, but still running on the blockchain, and just sort of being on the forefront for the countries adopting cryptocurrencies, for the companies adopting cryptocurrencies, and so on. So like a Visa in the crypto payments.
Well, there's certainly a lot more fear of crypto by people who are not who haven't used it. And you see a lot of people saying, take $100 or take a Bitcoin. And then someone saying, no, I won't take the Bitcoin. It's a scam. Take the $100, which, of course, is not a great decision. But there is a lot of that fear out there. It certainly hasn't helped the goal you just mentioned. But
No. You're right.
We've seen that before with the last crypto winter. Oh, it's a scam. And then it came back. It certainly slows things down.
Obstacle, this is I don't think there are like these crazy obstacles, right? I think it's going how it should be. Regulators are finding the way to do that, right? To really regulate their local businesses, protect the customers, right? So it's all going in their own sort of a pace, and you see it's going in waves, right? It's growing, it's decreasing. The adoption of crypto with each wave is increasing, right? Many people used cryptocurrency, many people stayed with using cryptocurrency, right? So I would say when you say there is a fear on the market, right? Still, we have more people than, let's say, a few years ago who know about crypto, who don't mind spending crypto, even if it is the
And a lot of institutional support, a lot of wealth managers and
it's getting there.
Consumer side, yeah.
I will give you just one number.
Okay, so it's all going according to the plan of Max.
I would say just the world is rotating around the strategy that we decided. So we have no other option than to achieve these goals.
So you have no like a company obstacle, like a capital is fine. You're able to find the talent you need, grow your company.
These are all normal things, right? These are all completely normal things, right? I don't just see something crazy is happening, right? We know that regulators will be inventing the laws which we don't agree with. We know that it would be always hard to find the good managers or developers on the market. We know, I mean, the capital market in crypto is not that crazy if you are over the stage of the startup. It's sort of getting better, right? You get the attention from the funds, from the companies who are even asking you, do you need some money, right? Of course, we are on expanding spree. We are hiring. We are getting new licenses. We are expanding. And so far, so good, right? The challenges which we have, I think they are healthy and we're just able to go through them.
Yeah, we saw that you're also expanding in Latin America. What's the particular opportunities there that you see?
Basically, Latin America is in the news as one of the leaders in adoption, that people really use cryptocurrencies more and more, mostly because of instability of their local currencies, right? we saw the laws in El Salvador right now. Brazil is getting there, in Venezuela, for people storing cryptocurrency, sort of a saving from the currency, which loses the value every day. And we sort of saw that this is an opportunity, right? The Latin America is quite developed in the sense of internet, right? It has a lot of internet businesses, online shops, entertainment websites, and so on. And the adoption is there, right? So it looks like an opportunity. So right now we focus in our expansion more on the Latin America, but Asia and US also should be afraid that we will be getting there as well.
Okay. All right. If you're in Asia, don't worry. CoinsPaid is coming to you too. It's good to see that you just see obstacles as something to jump over and get to the next accomplishment. All the best luck to you. And thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. There was a pleasure to be here with you. And thank you a lot for all the clever questions. And thanks for the listeners, to the listeners.
Yeah, at least two listeners. That's Max Kripishev, the co-founder and CEO of CoinsPaid. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.